In a split decision yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down restrictions on Louisiana abortion clinics. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Louisiana law before the high court required doctors who perform abortions to have hospital admitting privileges within 30 miles of the clinic they perform their abortions. We will break down the decision and what it means with your thoughts along the way on this ruling at 800-642-1234. Mary Ziegler is here. She's a professor at Florida State University College of Law, author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So this was a 5-4 decision with four liberal justices writing a separate opinion from Chief Justice John Roberts. How did the justices interpret this case?
Well, I think one of the interesting things, or probably the most striking thing, is that we were not sure going into June Medical if we just had a solid conservative majority that would always vote to uphold abortion restrictions, or if the fate of abortion rights in America was up for grabs. And it turns out that the latter possibility is true, and that John Roberts is that new swing justice. The majority, or was actually a plurality of the court, the four liberal justices, emphasized that there was no evidence that this law helped anyone. In other words, that admitting privileges served any useful purpose, and that there was considerable evidence that the law would force the closure of all but one clinic in Louisiana. Interestingly, Roberts didn't seem particularly persuaded by any of that and was quite openly skeptical about abortion rights. He noted that if this was the court was working with a blank slate and this was the first time they heard this case, he would have voted to uphold the law. And in fact, he did just that in 2016. So Roberts' opinion was much more about his respect for precedent and his concern about the court's legacy than it was about his support for abortion rights.
Yeah, because of
lots of uncertainty going forward. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, looking at this precedence, because this suit mirrored the case in Texas, literally almost word for word, that the court had struck down in 2016. Did we learn anything from this case on where the court is headed on abortion and Roe?
We learned some things, but I think it's still kind of ambiguous, right? I think on the one hand, Roberts feels bound by precedent. And of course, Roe v. Wade is a precedent too. If anything, it's more of a precedent. It's been around for almost 50 years at this point. On the other hand, Roberts seems pretty skeptical about abortion rights and pretty committed to an approach to abortion regulations that would give states more room to restrict access. So I think one thing we know for sure is that the kind of really fast pace of change we saw in 2019 with states trying to ban abortion at fertilization seems likely to backfire. And that if the Supreme Court is going to overturn Roe, it's going to take time and patience on the part of abortion opponents, which is something they don't seem to have a lot of, especially after several setbacks this Supreme Court term already.
What did the defenders of the Louisiana restrictions argue in this case?
Well, there were two main arguments that Louisiana made in the case. The first was that Louisiana is different from Texas, essentially that the problems the Supreme Court had spotted in Texas 4 years ago in striking down that state's law didn't apply to Louisiana, that Louisiana doctors would have an easier time getting admitting privileges and staying open, and that the burden on women would be less onerous. Louisiana also, I think, invited the court, at least implicitly, to gut its 2016 decision and to show in doing that that it wasn't particularly concerned about its past precedents on abortion, at least not after Brett Kavanaugh joined the court. Louisiana made another argument, which was that abortion doctors shouldn't even be able to sue in the first place. They are allowed now to sue on behalf of their patients on the theory that patients face obstacles to bringing lawsuits on their own behalf. Louisiana argued that that was sort of tantamount to the fox guarding the hen house because abortion is bad for women and abortion providers don't care about their patients. The Supreme Court didn't buy that either, really any of those arguments. But again, it really boiled down to Roberts' respect for precedent more than anything else.
Yeah, because you told us in April that this case is also about who can bring a suit, who can challenge the constitutionality of abortion laws and whether abortion providers can sue. What does that tell us about how abortion law is being argued in America?
Well, I think that there's a lot of reasons that abortion opponents focused on these arguments that abortion hurts women. And the most, I think there are two probably that are the most central. The first is that the anti-abortion movement has long sort of had an image problem when it comes to women, especially in the years when you saw more attacks on abortion clinics and even murders of abortion doctors. Focusing on arguments about women helped to kind of create a softer image and to appeal to women within the anti-abortion movement who believed that abortion was in fact harmful. Second, I think that many believe that it was a necessary step if anyone really wished to see Roe overturned. Many leaders of the anti-abortion movement believe that Americans will never tolerate the reversal of Roe if they think that women need access to abortion to achieve equal citizenship. So a necessary precursor to overruling Roe is showing that that's wrong and that abortion is in fact harmful to women. But we've seen from the Supreme Court that while that might be a necessary step, it's going to be very hard to win with that argument, at least with the kinds of laws the Supreme Court has already seen.
We're discussing yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on abortion with Mary Ziegler as our guide. She's a professor at Florida State University College of Law, and you can join in. Do you think there could be a compromise on abortion, or is this an issue that doesn't leave for any room for compromise? What did you see out of yesterday's ruling? How have you talked with family members and friends about abortion rights and anti-abortion groups? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Mary, during the pandemic, some states have moved to ban abortion by designating it a non-essential service. And when we last talked, you had said you were seeing momentum. Is this still playing out around the country?
Not as much as when we last spoke. And the simple reason for that is just which states are reopening the most quickly. So generally, it's pretty red states that were passing these COVID-19 abortion bans. And it's also pretty red states that were the fastest to reopen. And of course, what the justification for banning abortion had been the elimination of what were considered non-essential medical services. That, of course, isn't necessarily going to remain the case because we've seen cases surge in Florida, unfortunately, where I live, as well as in Texas. And Texas, of course, was one of the main proponents of a COVID-19 abortion ban. So depending on how bad things get in Texas, we may see more closures. And if we see more closures, we may see the reemergence of COVID-19 abortion bans. But they've been paused for now.
And we were seeing also reports of women having to cross state lines as services non-essential, being deemed non-essential services. They were being shut down and therefore, that limiting access to these clinics.
Right. And I mean, we've seen that will probably continue if states do in fact shut down clinics. It's worth noting that even without COVID-19 abortion bans, of course, states have enough restrictions that there are very few clinics in states like Mississippi and Louisiana, independently of what the Supreme Court did yesterday. So even in the absence of a COVID-19 abortion ban, there are almost certainly women crossing state lines to get abortions.
Mary Ziegler, professor at Florida State University College of Law. She researches abortion law and reproductive history. She's giving us some context into yesterday's U.S. Supreme Court decision striking down a Louisiana abortion law. How do you feel about the ruling now? Can there be a compromise? Can there be common ground on this issue? Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a minute with Mary Ziegler here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the U.S. Supreme Court split decision that came down yesterday. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The High Court struck down a Louisiana law that could have left the state with one abortion clinic. The closely watched case could have reshaped abortion laws across the nation, but Chief Justice John Roberts joined the court's liberal justices to uphold precedents. Have you been anticipating this ruling? What are your thoughts on the state of the abortion debate today? Is it more polarized? What is the future of Roe v. Wade? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Mary Ziegler with us, a professor at Florida State, and her most recent book is called Abortion and the Law in America. Mary, beyond Louisiana, what could this ruling mean for clinics providing abortion services here in Wisconsin or in other states?
Well, I think that it certainly means that the exact kind of law, what are often called trap laws, targeted regulations of abortion providers, those laws are not going to work at the U.S. Supreme Court. And so Wisconsin lawmakers who were invested in that approach are going to have to go back to the drawing board. It doesn't mean necessarily that other abortion restrictions that affect clinics in Wisconsin or affect those on either side of this debate in Wisconsin are going to be unconstitutional. Really what it means, I think in my opinion, is just uncertainty on top of uncertainty. We know that John Roberts now is probably himself doesn't know what he's going to do about Roe v. Wade, but I think it's reasonable to assume that this court will uphold more restrictions down the line. We won't know which ones for some time. So I think the kind of short answer for everyone in Wisconsin is that we all have to stay tuned and that Chief Justice Roberts will keep us guessing.
Julie Rickleman, who argued the case before the court on behalf of the Center for Reproductive Rights, she said yesterday, "We think the opinion muddies the waters a bit and will lead to more litigation rather than less." Why is that?
I think that's quite likely. Roberts' opinion was not crystal clear about where he was going about abortion, and that, of course, will encourage abortion opponents to look for an opening. I think that really, to be fair, though, I think almost any decision from the court would have queued up more litigation. We've seen efforts to dismantle Roe rage on for decades, and I don't think litigation will really slow down, even in the event that the Supreme Court does overturn Roe. So for better or worse, unfortunately, I think this battle is going to be with us for a long time.
Roberts, in his decision, also noted that neither party in June Medical Services in this case had asked the court to revisit Planned Parenthood versus Casey, that 1992 abortion decision. What might have he been noting there?
Well, I'm sorry, you cut out for a minute. Would you mind saying that again?
Yeah, sure. Chief Justice Roberts in his decision noted that neither party in the June case here had asked the court to revisit the Planned Parenthood versus Casey case from 1992. What might he be noting there?
Well, I think that Roberts is probably aware, as many are, that no one knew for sure which way the wind was blowing. It's not entirely true. There were amicus briefs, including one submitted by lawyers at Americans United for Life, which is a group that really was sort of the force behind the Louisiana law, that did ask the court to reverse both Planned Parenthood versus Casey and Roe v. Wade. But I think for the most part, I think abortion opponents understood that that was a stretch and that proceeding more incrementally was the way to go. I think Roberts made pretty clear that that's the only chance abortion opponents have. If there's a blueprint for moving forward, it's going to be a gradual one.
We're discussing yesterday's Supreme Court ruling on abortion with Mary Ziegler. She's a professor at Florida State University College of Law. Let's take a call now. Lori from Shano is not there anymore. So, Mary, let's look more here at Roe versus Wade and the remaining law of the land. What did the decision say about what happens with Roe? I know you're saying stay tuned, but what cases in particular would you see chipping away at Roe?
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably the most significant cases are ones that could be connected to the court's past precedent, because Roberts has signaled his investment in that idea. And the court's most recent win for the anti-abortion movement was a case called Gonzalez versus Carhart that upheld a federal ban on what was called partial birth abortion. Abortion opponents have lots of cases in the pipeline that try to build on Gonzalez. Some ban abortion at 20 weeks or later on the theory that fetal pain is possible. Others outlawed so-called dismemberment abortion, which is the anti-abortion term for dilation and evacuation, the most common abortion procedure in the after the first trimester of pregnancy. And recently, we've also seen a surge in laws that ban abortions for specific reasons, such as the race, sex, or disability. So I think for all of those, we should expect to see those coming before the court, partly because they either don't ask Roberts to overturn a precedent, or they in fact give him the cover of this being a mere extension of something the Supreme Court has already done. I don't think that's necessarily the best argument. They would be pretty big departures from what the court has done, but there's at least a little bit more political cover for a judge who's concerned about the court's reputation.
Charlene called from Eau Claire, couldn't stay with us, and Charlene says, unfortunately, the attack on Planned Parenthood and abortion is affecting women's health care everywhere, especially minority women. And Charlene says, this isn't just an abortion issue. How does this fold into the overarching look at reproductive health?
Well, I think obviously the attack on Planned Parenthood affects reproductive health in general, and so do many of the laws that you see. Any kind of law that forces the closure of a clinic, like the one the Supreme Court invalidated, will, of course, have effects on access to other reproductive health care as well. That's also true, of course, of COVID-19 abortion bans. Not all abortion restrictions have the same effects, of course, that way. If you're outlawing just a specific procedure or you're outlawing a specific reason for abortion, that has sweeping effects on abortion rights, but may have less effects on providers who are also offering other reproductive health services. But I think in general, the point that when clinics close, it affects access to lots of services, especially for women in rural communities, is a really important one that sometimes gets lost.
So if you are not going after targeted laws, as you've been talking about, in more of these narrow cases, how do you go more broadly in trying to restrict abortion access?
Well, I think you have to be patient if you are an abortion opponent. And there hasn't been much sign of that lately. Donald Trump does not foster patience in either the anti-abortion movement or among conservatives more broadly, right? There's a sort of, you can have what you want right now, and the rules of politics don't apply to Trump, who's managed to overcome scandals that almost certainly would have doomed other leaders. But I think that won't work with the Supreme Court, at least as it's currently constituted. So I think there are kind of two paths forward. One would be to hope that Trump wins re-election in 2020 and is able to nominate someone much more conservative, maybe more than one person who's much more conservative than John Roberts, which would make Roberts' vote irrelevant. The second, I think, would be to buckle down and proceed more gradually and be willing to do this for a matter of years, not a matter of months, and to get much more incremental wins. Because if Roberts is ever going to be comfortable overturning Roe v. Wade, which is still an unknown, he's not going to be comfortable doing it quickly.
What did you see out of how the importance of precedents weighed in on this case and what precedents might have going forward for the integrity of the high court?
Well, I think Roberts certainly joined, I think in some ways did a lot this term to suggest that the Supreme Court is not a partisan institution. And this, of course, has been a great cause of his. Roberts got into a very public tiff with Donald Trump and recently about the idea that there were no Trump judges and no Obama judges. And I think this term he voted with his more liberal colleagues, not only in the abortion case, but also in cases involving DACA and involving LGBTQ plus discrimination. So to some, that will look like the court is not partisan and that at least sometimes Roberts doesn't vote with the conservative justices. To conservatives, it makes Roberts himself look political. They believe that Roberts' votes are about optics and not about the law, And that, in fact, undermines the court's legitimacy. So as you can imagine, most responses to this are coming to us through a very partisan lens, as is true of so many things in America now.
Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mary Ziegler is a professor at Florida State University College of Law. She is the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. Coming up, two advocates from Madison and Milwaukee share how small businesses are coping with a pandemic. Are you a small business owner? Are you open? What precautions do you have in place? How is your bottom line doing? Join our conversation at 800-642-1234. We'll be back to look at the situation on main streets all over Wisconsin, here in Madison and in Milwaukee. It's coming up right after this news update on the Ideas Network.